Welcome back. This is Park from the Humble Coach podcast. I'm afraid it's been a little while kind of getting back on the road, but we are back fairly fairly strong at the moment. As we're up to episode 40, which is a nice achievement from my perspective. But I'm joined today by a really interesting coach. Her name is Ursula Cullen. Ursula, thanks for joining me.
Having me.
No worries. So the field of coaching, in my opinion, and I'm sure in yours, Ursula, the same, has some distinct principles that we'd always kind of go by. But could you speak a little bit about your style of coaching, and the type of coaching that you're involved in at the moment, and how you got to that point, from your previous, or I suppose your current profession, and how they kind of link up together, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I founded my coaching business. It's called Suits Coaching, and I basically coach lawyers to practice law in a well-being lifestyle and on performance. But I point out at this early juncture, I also coach people outside of the law as well. So I'm not just, you know, totally lawyer-focused, but that my business, Suits Coaching, is around lawyer well-being and things like that. My background is law. I was a barrister for a number of years, and I went to transfer over to be a solicitor here in Ireland and in England and abroad as well, where I practiced in the British Virgin Islands. And I suppose I was 6 years altogether. And in my time being a lawyer, which I enjoy very much, I saw a lot of, you know, the things that faced by lawyers with well-being, you know, the long hours, the stress of the job, which I've experienced myself. I talk about on my Instagram page, and not a lot of lawyers are open about that, I think, because I suppose they have to be seen as strong, and that maybe seeking coaching might be seen as a sign of weakness, you know, which I want to obviously say it's not. And I've always really had a passion for personal development and human development, and that led me to look at coaching. I didn't know coaching existed like 4 years ago. I had no idea about it until I started reading books and reading up on it, and I found the more I read up on it, the more I thought, wow, this is everything I've been looking for in a career. So I thought, how can I combine my legal experiences and my personal experiences and help others to really achieve goals and get better and practice law better, and not just lawyers but people outside the law as well, and in achieving what they set out to do, maybe a change in their life. So I went about basically going to study coaching and got qualified in that and dove straight into opening Suits Coaching, and here I am. To cut a long story short.
Great stuff. No, that's super. No, that's excellent. So I'm gonna kind of we're gonna explore a lot of topics, I think, over the next little while. But the first one, I'm gonna dig back in a little bit, and I'm always interested in where the coaching, I suppose, kind of the coaching heart comes from. Within each person, so like where we would all kind of have been inspired at some stage before. For yourself, was it 4 years ago? Was it through a particular circumstance, particular issues that you were having that really made you change over, or do you think you've always been interested in coaching from a younger age, or even from dealing with different people over the years, even as a solicitor? Because I would probably say solicitor is probably a bit of a coach as well, to an extent. You're definitely helping kind of veer in each direction.
Yeah, because in barrister school, we're taught not to coach. It's like, you know, rule 101, don't coach the client. So I really had to do a complete mind shift on when I was training to be a coach. But I suppose you're right. I've always wanted to be a coach. I just never understood what it was. Yeah. I've had a very, very varied background. Some people call it a portfolio career. So I started off many years ago as an actor and a model, funny enough. And with the acting more so, I've always wondered why I was interested in it. And I suppose it was to do with the people and telling the story and getting, you know, the human side of it, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, it's only now that I'm older, I realise, oh, that's what that was about, mm-hmm. you know. And the more, I used to write a blog years ago, just for myself.
Yeah.
I stopped writing it recently because I've started Suits Coaching, but mm-hmm. It was always on personal development. And I thought, how could I turn this into making a living from it, and how can I start to pursue my passion, which is, you know, developing others, mm-hmm. human development and coaching. And every time I would read something on it, it went back to coaching, or the people that I admired
mm-hmm.
were coaches or motivational speakers.
Yeah.
And I thought, I really then went off to kind of find my tribe, if I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And because there wasn't that many people around that I felt like I did. And I realize that now, because I read somewhere only 2% of the population are into personal development.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. When I started talking about it many years ago, people were like, what are you talking about? You
know? Yeah.
I think they still are, probably, to a degree.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's where conscious came from.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting now, because I do think, like, those statistics are mad for me, but it doesn't surprise me. I think, and this is probably going not necessarily slightly off topic, but a little bit, I think, into the more macro the element of it. But with the, I suppose, with no different to the law or to coaching in general, but the onset of technology and, I suppose, the speed of change that we've experienced over the last maybe even 10 to 20 years has been extreme, and it's been extremely fast for change, whether it's technology, whether it's not necessarily kind of outrage culture, but definitely a really interesting kind of mix of areas that has brought everything up to a very heightened level. And when it comes to the likes of coaching or even personal development, I do still think people underestimate its value, or underestimate the value of really taking a serious look at one's own personal development and how helpful that can be in their own lives. I think it's a really interesting one, because the statistics really don't lie. Like, because I think when you, like, you'll probably agree with me as well to an extent, but when you're in, especially in the likes of law or in fitness, like I am, we get very self-involved in it, or we definitely get very wrapped up in it. And it can be very difficult to detach ourselves from those things and really work on our own personal development while we're in those elements. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about that and some of the challenges of, especially the law, the workload and the long hours and the stressful environment, it can be very, very difficult to kind of pull out of that. Was there a particular event or a situation that you found very, very challenging and that brought you closer towards the coaching change?
I suppose from my experience that I can bring to other coaches is I've been in the trenches,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as, you know, the late hours, trying to get a work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought outside the box. There's got to be more to this. There has to be a culture change,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think some law firms are starting to get it. They're starting to understand, mm-hmm. you know, lawyers' well-being. And that, you know, from a firm's perspective, that maybe they can retain lawyers and they can work better. Their performances work better when you have happier lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think it was common sense, but yeah. Turns out it's not so common. You know, some issues that I've experienced in my own practice,
mm-hmm.
at the bar was, and in my career in general, that I've owned my own experience with, is mm-hmm. getting over a difficult case.
Yeah.
And something I want to coach lawyers on, it's not something that we're ever trained for in law school, and it's not something that a lot of people In general, I think to be generalized, I don't think people have a lot of sympathy for lawyers.
No.
I think when you hear the term lawyer, you immediately have a negative view of them, unless they've won a case for you, you know, or they're making so much money and, you know, all they do is bill and, you know, every stereotypical thing you could throw out there. But at the end of the day, they're human beings too, you know, and they're dealing, what I find, especially with some of them in maybe criminal law or in certain areas of litigation, dealing with, or family law even, dealing with extremely difficult cases that are very harrowing. I've had a few of my own that were hard, you know, and, you know, you're just, and this is not, to be very clear, this is nothing to affirm or anything. This is my own personal experience I'm talking about. There was no, you know, how to get over it, or there was no training. Not that law firms are required to train, they're not. But from a coaching perspective, it can be very helpful to get over, like, or how to put in steps to implement how to get over a case. And it's important to point out as well that, you know, coaching isn't therapy or counselling or anything like that. It's present and future based. So we don't do any type of healing or anything like that. It's very much goal setting. So that's one element I can bring. I wanted to bring my experience to other lawyers and coaching on that. And also you hit on it there earlier, technology. I mean, technology is amazing. You know, we've come on leaps and bounds in the legal world and in outside of the legal world as well. But what I find now with lawyers and with myself and I at times as well is that we're connected to the office 24/7 really, you know, and that's a kind of, it always arises around work-life balance. And I call it, in one of my programs I developed, I call it technology management, because you nearly need a college course on that alone, you know, to know when to switch off. And I do it myself. I was my own worst enemy, especially when I was a barrister, because you're self-employed. You're totally, your success and your failure is totally on you.
Yeah.
So you're glued to the phone. Any sort of email that comes in, you know, you want to get back to it straight away. Well, I found I did. I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I found I did because you want the work, you know. And, of course, with pleasing clients as well, a quick turnaround lawyers are trying to get as well. So there's that side to it as well with technology. But on the good side is that you can work remotely if you want at times, if you can do that. Or when I was a barrister, you can work away from the court, you know, because you're obviously, you can be on the laptop and things. So technology is good as well. So there's kind of a balance on it.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. There's a couple of pieces there that we can delve into a bit deeper to. One, I suppose, and especially specifically towards the bar and towards the law profession. I suppose from a layperson's view in general, not being involved in the law, or even in the fitness kind of view, not being involved in fitness and things like that, just for our own professions, but. I suppose the fact that the law is the law to an extent means that there's not a huge amount, like, not that there's not creativity, but there's not a huge amount of wiggle room when it comes to how to address certain issues and so on, like that there is distinct precedents set, if that makes sense. But I definitely agree that the general ethos around it, or the general management, or the general atmosphere around that type of profession could definitely be improved. But is it stuck a little bit in the actual pace of change in the general macro level? Like, as in, when it how long does it take a law to be passed, which might actually be heavily affecting a lot of people on the front lines, if that makes sense? So if it's something with family law, or if it's something with a particular type of case that would come up quite regularly, is it difficult for solicitors and lawyers and those people in that profession, is it difficult for them to actually adjust to that speed of change? Or has the industry changed spectacularly in the last 15, 20 years? Have you seen, or do you think it has changed or made it more difficult to actually be in that industry? What do you think?
It depends really if you're a barrister or solicitor. The barrister life is, it's the greatest job in the world. I loved being a barrister, absolutely loved it, but trying to get the cases in and different things and external circumstances can hamper that. I don't think it's changed that much, but as far as cases going on, I mean, not to sound too general, it really is a case-to-case basis on depending on what's happening in it, you know, and what court you're in and things like that. But as far as the wellness movement and change, I think it's happening very slowly. I think Britain are a little bit ahead because they've signed up to, like a, for the want of a better word, like a wellness treaty almost, with top law firms signing into that. I might come back to you on the exact wording for it,
No problem,
of it,
of course.
but they've really got that. And I think a lot of the firms, certainly ones I've heard, are starting to look into wellness in the workplace, which is fantastic. If, you know, because it's much needed. Lawyers, they work extremely hard, and it's sometimes a thankless job in the sense that, you know, not many people really tell you you've done a great job, or because it's, you know, it's all results based. And if you do a bad job, then you get told, you know. But it is a tough gig, and it's not glamorous. So
No.
I think well-being is really important. But as far as the change in that, I think we're at the start of it. And I think because, you see, the big issue, I suppose, that lawyers are perfectionists, a lot of them, and they're very competitive people by nature. And I had this whole talk with, I do volunteer work with Lawcare,
Yes.
which is a charity, like a support charity and a helpline for lawyers or anyone in the legal industry. It doesn't have to be lawyers. And I was having this discussion recently about the lawyers being perfectionists, including myself. I had that disease, as I call it, perfectionism, which I've tried to stamp out. And that leads to a lot of different issues. And around the competitiveness of the industry, I think, well, maybe it's outside law as well, but I think a lot of people, a lot of lawyers feel that if they ask for help or they go to coaching, that it's seen as a sign of weakness, or that you need, to use inverted commas, help, you know. And that's not what it is, really, because some of the top people, most successful people in the world, have coaches. You know, I posted about it recently on my Instagram. You know, I posted a video about Bill Gates, the ex-CEO, I think Eric Schmidt of Google, talking about the benefits of coaching and how it helps them. So, as you probably know yourself, Bård, like fitness and coaching in the US is huge, you
Absolutely.
know, and in the UK it's catching on as well. But I think coaching in Ireland is on the precipice. I think it's going to be something that people can really get into, and I think everyone's starting to see, in my opinion, the benefit of it, really.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. I think you hit on a couple of interesting ones there. I think one of the biggest parts of it to, and one of more difficult parts to change that type of a pace of adjustment, I suppose, towards a more holistic look and support system for the likes of the law profession. Is that it's not actually that it's not it doesn't look that glamorous. There's not too many superstars, or even if they are, it's you know what I mean? They're not shouted about, and if they are, then it's definitely and I think it's very much an Irish thing as well. There definitely is a little bit of begrudger mentality going on. Well, look, such and such doesn't have to shouldn't need to be doing this. He's doing such and such, or she's doing she should be taking care of this person and sorting out this case. And I still do. I still like. I think. If we look at 30, 40 years ago, which in the grand scheme of things, this is not in developmental kind of I suppose time frames when it comes to the likes of the law, it is very, very small, but it has it hasn't changed, and it's barely just getting to change now. But like you said, because it's not very glamorous, there isn't as much freedom to express, okay, what are the actual issues going on here, and how can we really improve on
Well,
those areas.
yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think when I started, I suppose my mission about lawyers' well-being and being an advocate for lawyers' well-being, the feedback I was getting sometimes, to use my own words, it's all lip service. I mean, really, how do we balance our work life and how can we manage the stress when we have, you know, all this work? You can't tell someone who's, you know, house is on the line or family is on the line or they're going to lose money. You can't tell them, sorry, I'm knocking off at 6 o'clock. I hope you're all right. And I'll, you know, you have to be strong for people and you have to be there for them. But, you know, I ask perhaps who's there for the lawyers at the end of the day, and who has their well-being and interest, because it is a tough gig.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard job. It's long hours and it's many hours spent away from your family. As well, which is tough for a lot of lawyers.
I can absolutely see that. I think it's a very challenging profession, but because like that, it's doing fantastic work. Like, you guys do fantastic work, and it's extremely essential for our safety and our own well-being. Because choosing to go into that type of profession, I think, takes a certain type of person. And it definitely takes, and I'm going to speak a little bit about it now, but it is both a very empathetic person, but also someone who's really, really dedicated and is extremely interested, extremely ruthless at times, as in they will be able to get all of the work done and they'd be able to really push their own firm forward or push their own profession and quality of service forward. But it's a really interesting balance between having such compassion for people, but at the same stage dealing with these extreme situations on a very daily basis, which I find very challenging. I think it's interesting, but you guys are definitely at the coalface, and it's a pity that there isn't a lot more support. But it is fantastic that you and others like you now are definitely helping in improving that. Could you speak a little bit about some of the actual tactics now that we can? Lawyers could, or people in the legal profession could employ, be it first of all on a very personal level, but then also utilizing actual coaching services to improve their workload management, to improve their work-life balance. Is there any particular real straight off the bat ones that you're like, look, this is a really fantastic idea, it's worked really well, let's try and get as many people to implement this as possible? Is there any real straightforward tactics that you like to employ off the cuff?
Yeah, one of my basic things that I've always tried to do is work smarter, not harder. And by that I mean basically putting out time wasters, and that might sound a bit ruthless to use your words, but when I mean time wasters, I don't just mean people. I'm talking about, you know, how long you're going for your coffees, how long you're spending on your lunch break, and accounting for that time. I also tell lawyers, always take the lunch break, don't dine al desco, get out and go for a walk, you know. So I always take a look at that, like, what are you doing during your day from the second you get up in the morning to the time you get home? And you'd be surprised the amount of time wasting that goes on, for the want of a better term, from the lawyer. I was one of those, you know. I'd spend an hour talking to people, or I'd bump into a colleague, I'd be chatting to them for 10 minutes, they'd ask me for a coffee, I'd go down, or a cup of tea, that'd be a half an hour, you know, and it goes, the day goes, and then you realise, gosh, I have to do a mountain of work now. That's one. Work-life balance, I don't think the two are separate, is my personal philosophy and opinion. You know, work is a part of your life, and your life usually meaning your family, your friends, extracurricular activity, and if we were looking at the balancing scales of justice, they're usually tipped down with work, you know. And I always ask people when I'm coaching them on work-life balance, what's important to them and their values. And most people, when you ask them that question, not just lawyers, they'll tell you it's their family, number one, is the most important thing to them. Which is usually a core value. So I try and get people's values out of them to see, are they living to their values? And normally they're not. And when they're not living to their values, or I find that's when the work life balance goes out of shift, you know? So that's the second one. the third one I will come back to because I've gone out of my brain.
That's okay. No. Well, I think I'll interject there. The those two things I definitely think are vital, because they'll bring it back to the reasons, I suppose, a lot of lawyers and a lot of solicitors and people in the legal profession will have gotten into it in the first place, be it potentially for the monetary gain, or is it actually to help people? And if they want to help people, then they definitely are very compassionate people.
Yeah.
And they have to have both then compassion for themselves and the actual important elements of their lives that are outside of their work, as well as the respect for their work. I do think it can be very difficult with that. I think that's one of the interesting, and just taking it from a kind of fitness point of view, and I need to, and I'm beginning more and more and more as I get older and I become more aware of taking my own advice more regularly. But as well as that, actually just having a bit of belief. I've struggled, I suppose, over the years with some self-belief issues and stuff like that, and I think we've all done it, but it can be definitely difficult. But when you like yourself, who's been a successful lawyer and successful solicitor and has a successful coaching business now, there's no doubt that you're doing something right. So having that self-belief is really, really important, and being able to allow yourself to actually be okay with, okay, well, look, I'm actually doing quite a good job here, but I need to just probably tidy up some of the minutes that I'm wasting at certain things and just become... I read a great book a while back, and it's basically just saying, look, you need to be a professional as much as possible, and a professional just kind of gets to it, doesn't waste a lot of time. And I had a fantastic lady, Adi Kaju, on the podcast a while back, and she's like, look, you need to be a professional. You yourself need to be a professional for yourself. Like imagine that you're the actual business. You have to be the best professional for your business. So I think that can be really interesting. I think there's probably a few other elements to it, but one of that mention of workload management, and I have no doubt that it can be very challenging, because you guys have to consistently speak and find out more and more details about particular cases and about particular clients. And time can get kind of dragged on very, very easily in different conversations and in different settings and quite regularly. So that can be quite challenging to manage. But if you nail that stuff down, it can definitely help us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I could talk about on mindset for the whole podcast. I would have been the same many years ago. I would have had a lot of issues with negative self-talk. And I think with humans, once something becomes, you know, bad enough, or you've had enough of it, you just draw the line. Enough is enough. Yeah. And that's really what I got to that point, where I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, there's so many people out there that can be against you. Not everyone, obviously. I don't mean everyone's against, but I mean people that are willing to talk you down or tell you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I'm not going to be one of them. No. So, yeah, I started a real journey on the mindset and cultivating it and making it positive. And yeah, it's not easy at the start, but it is absolutely doable.
Definitely not. So the next kind of element, I suppose, that we'll talk a little bit about is some of the other areas of the law profession in specifics that people will find quite challenging. So you mentioned earlier on about the post case, or at least the surrounding case management of the actual the lawyer, but also then any repercussions potentially after that, and finalizing different elements or particularly long cases that have been drawn out quite a long time, and they may have brought up different challenges from the past and stuff like that. Do you have any particular strategies that you like to recommend for lawyers and solicitors and people in the legal profession that can help them just kind of manage that kind of a situation? I know there can be individual type of ones, but is it just that mindfulness that needs to be really, really cultivated and worked on at a consistent level?
Yeah, well, I think it's two things. Mainly for me, and I can only talk on my own experience, what's worked for me, I'm actually, I love fitness as well. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been into fitness for years and years and years. This is in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I got into it. I was always outdoorsy, but never a gym person. Mm-hmm. And I realized there's a direct correlation. Well, I found anyway, a direct correlation with a great mindset, feeling fantastic after the gym. I don't know. That's how mm-hmm. I feel anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, there's really something in this. So whenever I have a stressful day or had a stressful day in the past, mm-hmm. I would take it out in the gym. And from that, I thought, well, how else can I? That's my body. That's not my mind, you know. So how can I work my mind out? Because I believe the two are in synergy, your mind and your body together. So I started mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Now, 5 years backward, if you had told me mindfulness as a lawyer, I would have been listening. Yeah. Look, you know,
they would have brought you for another coffee and said, hey, hold on, what's going on?
Exactly. I'd be like, no, it's too whimsical for me. What are you talking about? I don't believe in all that.
Yeah.
But I'm very open-minded. I have a growth mindset, and I just went to these classes. Mm-hmm. And mindfulness, the key to mindfulness is practice, practice, practice. And it's not always easy, because if you're like me, your mind is always busy and active. It can go in 10 different directions. Mm-hmm. But I always advise people, if they ask me, obviously, what kind of works for you, or how do I manage? Mm-hmm. And I say fitness. It doesn't have, you don't have to be a triathlete or go to a triathlon. Like, start off small, you know, and work your way up. And with the mindfulness, it's the same thing, really. Working, starting off small, and being aware of being in the moment, being present. And the more I practiced it, the more I found I was a lot calmer as a person. Mm-hmm. I'd no more sleep issues. It really was amazing. So I try and do some mindfulness in programs that I'm doing, just to bring a small element into it, or even bring awareness to the practice of mindfulness as well. And I'm speaking solely from my own perspective. I was very someone who was, I need the answer now. I don't have time to be doing mindfulness. Or, you know, going to the gym. I need a quick fix. But, there really is no quick fix. It's a process. And it's something that you have to really switch your lifestyle to and incorporate it into your, stitch it into the fabric of your life. Mindfulness and fitness, or whatever works for you. But not everyone's into fitness, or it maybe doesn't work for them with, you know, injuries or whatever the scenario is, or family commitments. But definitely the mindfulness, you can do it anywhere, on the bus, on the train, going into work, and, you know, listening to it in your ears and things like that. So I would definitely advise to even, you know, explore it.
I definitely agree. I think, if anything, the more I speak to other coaches, the more I speak to different people with different backgrounds and different ideology, different experiences, the more I believe in the mentality of working on ourselves as almost a separate project from our work, nearly, to an extent.
Yeah.
Like, it's really interesting. Like, I think I've always been interested in those in that type of a situation. So, like, in individual projects, be it comics or whatever it is, like, just an individual, a really interesting type of a way of, I think it can be difficult though, because we can detach ourselves a little bit too much into our work, like we mentioned earlier on, or into worrying about our particular firm or business or whatever it is. And it can sometimes allow us to get, like, we'll all get wrapped up, but allow us to take ourselves less seriously, when we should be pretty much the most serious thing, be the most person, that should be taken the most seriously, irrelevant of whether even our significant others or our family or whatever it is, or our work colleagues. Like, number one should be us and our quality of life, so that we can help others, especially as coaches. It can be very, very difficult, I know, to do that, but I definitely think it's a game changer when we're trying, like, even this podcast, consistently trying to work on myself, my conversation tone, etc. Like, all of this is really interesting, and getting ideas from yourself, like, it's really fantastic education, but it's very humbling that it is Like I was training yesterday, I was training today, and then also mental training today as well, which
Yeah,
is great.
absolutely. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's great. The final kind of couple of pieces, do you see coaching and I suppose a more holistic approach to assisting the law practitioners being integrated a lot more into coaching or into particular practices or in Ireland? Or do you find, is there a particular appetite, or is it still a little bit stubborn because of our Irishness to an extent, or is it just the profession that's kind of keep catching it out? Do you know?
Well, what I've found is when I've talked about it, and I suppose what my mission is people have been quite receptive to it. They want to know more. They're inquisitive about it. And I suppose Suits Coaching, as far as I know, is the first coaching business in Ireland dedicated to lawyers. There's many coaching businesses out there, but they don't exclusively deal with lawyers, as far as I know, in my research. If anyone wants to write in to correct me, that's absolutely fine.
But I'd say you're correct. I'd say you're correct.
Yeah, so I mean, there's plenty in England and a rake of them in the States, but I couldn't find one in Ireland, which is another reason why I started Suits Coaching. But I do generally, the people that I've talked about have been quite receptive and want to know more about it. It's also, coaching not just from lawyer to lawyer, one to one, but I mean, there's many benefits of it. Like, I think happier lawyers' staff are retained more. I think there's a better outcome, and there's been many articles written about it, about the effectiveness of executive coaching, and leadership skills as well for lawyers and things like that. So, and they're always wanting to learn. So I've generally, in my own experience, found that they've been quite open to it. But as far as the wellness movement, I think there's a bit more work to be done on that side of things. Because again, I think there's I don't think it's lawyer exclusive, but I think it's generally that around mental health, not that I coach on mental health, I don't, but I mean from a wellness in the law perspective, that some people might think, oh, going to a coach or asking for help is a sign of weakness, or that, you don't need it because you're strong. And strong people, of course, ask for help, and strong people go to coaching,
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, actually. This is what I suppose kind of a little bit of a different kind of an angle to it. With I suppose, and this is I don't really know about this now, mind, but and you may be able to help me, but there is how much of a divide in age groups or in experience levels do we currently have, I suppose, in Ireland? Is there a big influx of younger lawyers and younger solicitors these days, or is it still quite a senior kind of profession? And if that's the case, if it is quite a younger person's game nearly to an extent at the moment, there may be some hope for actually it being able to implement those type of holistic surroundings and environments maybe a little bit easier possibly. I don't know if you've thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, it is starting to be like more young people coming into it every year, trainees and things like that. The solicitor kind of is quite different from the barrister route, and I think a lot of barristers leave quite early due to work and things like that. Like, trying to get the work in, they go elsewhere. But definitely, yes, there's a lot of solicitors, younger solicitors, obviously coming in.
Yeah, so I do think there definitely will be, and like you said, if this is just the ground floor really for the more holistic approach to the law profession and to the legal profession, it can definitely be a lot more scope for improvement and adding in other areas, like you mentioned, even some improvement of mental health services and things like that, like law care. And there's definitely going to be a lot more scope for, and a lot more, I suppose, even awareness of the ability of coaching to really improve somebody's performance and prolong their career in it, rather than just trying to be in a rush to have to get to this particular point or this particular position, etc. They now can probably, with a good level of coaching, they can actually streamline their progress a lot more straightforward than anything else, and really enjoy the benefits of the actual job rather than just working for the job to pay for the job's kind of mentality, if that makes sense, and all the trimmings and the whole lot. You can now actually enjoy life outside of that because everything is more streamlined within your job.
That's
Via
exactly
the
it.
coaching, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it for it. I mean, coaching is excellent for, even soft skills or communication skills, improving public speaking skills. Some people might be surprised by that, especially if coming from a barrister. But, public speaking is, it's an art for, especially being a lawyer, there's a lot to it. It's not just a case of standing up and having a chat. There's a lot of prep in it.
Very much.
Even besides the law, talking. So it really gives lawyers and people in general, I think it gives them a competitive edge if they use a coach. And Suits Coaching, we have three core values in the business, and that's quality, confidentiality, and integrity. And the number one, I mean, they're all important, but the number one being confidentiality, because Ireland is so small and it's a small legal world. And I suppose some lawyers might not want others to know that they're being coached. So everything that I coach on and the meetings that I have with lawyers is completely confidential.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think it's very important that there's and you have obviously got it, that sensitivity towards the individual profession that you're dealing with. If you like you mentioned, if you're dealing with somebody who's not in the legal profession, just as a regular person in a different field, even a fitness field or etc. You have that strong those strong core values that people can really recognize. Okay, well, I'm not that concerned about confidentiality, da da da. But if somebody really does want to work, like does want that confidentiality, they want the quality of service, then they know that there's a place and a person like yourself who can help them.
Absolutely.
And that's a I think that's really important because people will definitely gravitate towards not. What they really can recognize is suitable for them, and I think no different than the fitness world, like where I work in CrossFit Galway and in French Finale, and CrossFit generally would have look at would have a I suppose a look of a very serious kind of mad looking stuff and like a lot of weightlifting and a lot of potential danger and stuff like that, and our we always say it, but our first statement is pretty much do no harm. At all times, like irrelevant. As long as we don't hurt you, we're getting you fitter slowly but surely. Like we're not going to get you amazingly fit on day one, and we're not going to tell you that. We're pretty much going to be like, look, this is the situation. This is really difficult because you're in encountering a lot of different sports, and if you're coming in at a steadier, less experienced level, okay, then it's going to be a long process. You better get ready for this and just be patient about it. But we don't sell the quick fixes. We don't sell the kind of mad looking stuff. We're a coaching business, and we've had people before who've come in and they're like, look, I need to get this and this and this, and we're like, look, that's not really achievable, and they've gone. But the people that we have at the moment are making progress hand over fist. They're pretty much everyday superheroes because they're just okay with the process. It's like that. They're just working on themselves for that hour at 6:15 in the morning or whatever it is. They're
And
just.
I really commend people like that. I mean, they're a different breed, people who do that and come to coaching, whether it be fitness, to improve themselves. It's really admirable, actually.
Yeah, I think it like definitely is. It's very diff. It's interesting because I have over the years taught different classes like spinning classes and worked with different in individual and team sports and individual sports, and I personally love being coached. I really really enjoy it. I've had some fantastic coaching mentors in the past who I definitely think it's have skewed my perception of it anyways, but I've always tried to be as conscientious as possible and understand like look, this is you're probably in this particular position, but I'm not going to BS you. I'm not going to go, look, you might be able to do this and this and this. I'm just going to build you. Like I have to, like if you're going to get on the train, we're going to try and go here, fine. But like, if you're it, the coach, the ability to be coachable, I find to be a fantastic thing. And if people, if we can kind of cultivate that, we're really in good places. But I think, especially with the likes of lawyers or the legal profession, it can be interesting because you probably have a bit of a balance between the ego, or at least the ambition of the type of profession, as well as the actual compassion of like, well, look, I wanted to help people in the first place, you know? So it's an interesting one to for those kind of people to be coached, but I think they'd be very good candidates for coaching, if that
And
makes
they are,
sense.
but from my clients as well that aren't lawyers, I mean, the two, it's not like they're drastically different or anything, but they're very much the same, actually, as in coaching and the different agendas and stuff. But what I always say, as you know, you're probably the same for it, but I ask my clients, like, and I key for me, because I don't work with everyone, but the key for me, if I can see that someone is committed, and they're not just showing up just to for the laugh, for the want of a better term, that commitment is key, you know, to it, because it is a process. I heard, I don't know where it was, I can't take credit for this, but someone said it's like going to a coach. It's like if you went to a fitness instructor and said, and they done out a plan for you and went, okay, I'm going to do the exercise myself. You know, it's the same thing. I could write out a plan and a coaching program, but you got to do the work yourself. I can do it for you, you know. So I think commitment and coachability go hand in hand, really, for successful coaching.
No, absolutely. Ursula, that's fantastic. I'm gonna ask you a couple of kind of oddish questions now towards the end. These are a bit more relaxed and a bit more general, but
Okay.
I suppose first of all, to kind of round out our coaching conversation, do you have any particular recommendations for the any lawyers? I don't know if we have too many lawyers, but hopefully we'll have loads of lawyers listening to the podcast over the next while. But even yeah, but even people who may be struggling to really find some balance in their lives, they may be considering like, okay, do I need a coach? But I don't really want to go like to fitness coaching or to the doctor and stuff. But I need somebody who would be confidential, would have my best interest at heart, would have a really interesting perspective, and in your kind of situation, so to speak. What would you say to people who may be on the fence about getting coaching, but really, well, probably could do with this quite well? Is there any particular kind of elements you'd kind of go, look, this is what I would recommend you to start off with, like just getting onto you or getting in touch with somebody as a coach, or what would you kind of recommend as a starting
You know,
point?
certainly I as well, I something I always try and clarify, I don't just coach lawyers, you know. I coach lawyers obviously because I'm a lawyer myself, so I can be helpful, but I do have clients where they're not from any legal background at all, and obviously, yes, get in contact. ursula@suitscoaching.com is my email address, or look me up on Instagram. But I would definitely say do that. Or you'll find that most coaches have a free exploratory talk. So if you don't know if coaching is for you, you can ring up a coach. I'm not saying all of them do that. I'm
No.
only speaking for myself, and have an exploratory conversation for a half an hour just to see, look, this is what I'm thinking about. I don't know if you even coach on that, or I don't know if coaching is for me. And I talk through for a half an hour to see if, A, I'm compatible with you, and vice versa. And if coaching is for you, it might not be, you know. So definitely get in contact. There's also a coaching website that offers free coaching. It escapes my mind now, but a simple Google search would do it. And there's plenty of coaches out there who are training, giving their free time, or their time for free, rather, pro bono, if money is an issue. But if you're serious about coaching and you're willing to make a change, whether it be in life, or because I'm a life coach and an executive coach, one is business and one is for everything life related, I suppose. I don't coach around relationships, or I don't coach around mental health, or anything like that. But most other stuff I think is coachable. Obviously, I can discuss that with a client.
course.
Absolutely, get in touch and we can have a chat and go from there.
Great stuff. Excellent. Well, I think that's a fantastic round out to the coaching conversation. I think people and myself included, and no doubt yourself the same, but we've all benefited from coaching in the past, and it can be just a challenge for people to find out who might be the most appropriate one for them to go to and speak to. But in your particular case, I think your values of confidentiality and quality and integrity are going to be very, very helpful in for people who may be unsure about, okay, look, I don't really want to speak about it too much, but I do want some confidentiality, etc. Even if it isn't in the legal world, like you said, it may be in the business world, it may be just in the private general world, but I think it's very, very helpful. Absolutely. Ursula, do you have any particular series on Netflix that you're watching these days? Are you into Netflix at all?
I do. I'm not a big TV watcher. I love to read.
Okay.
But I have an affiliation with Narcos.
Oh, nice. Then no, Narcos is good. Narcos is good.
Oh, it's great. So good. Don't get me started. I've been watching Narcos. And a guilty pleasure is My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Very funny.
Nice, great.
Those are my two. Excellent.
Cool. Is there any? What are you reading at the moment, book wise? Are you an Audible kind of character as well? Are you? I'm very heavy on the audio books, but I have a lot of actual real life books. But I kind of ebb and flow between them. But are you reading anything in particular or listening to anything in particular at the moment?
Oh gosh, yeah, I love to read. I'm more of I love like educational books, and I don't mean to sound like a total nerd when I say that, but I like things about neuroscience and that. I do like some thrillers, but my book I'm reading at the moment is The Idiot Brain by Dean Burnett. I've read it before, but it's so good. I leaned over it. And The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Caban.
Oh, I've heard the Charisma Myth actually. Yeah, excellent. Nice.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I'm having some challenges in getting my sleeping pattern organized recently. So I'm listening to Why We Sleep, which is actually really good. But it very much heavily speaks about neuroscience as well. So it's really, really interesting. They're fantastic ones. Okay, so Ursula, we're pretty much good for the moment. I'm going to leave you to enjoy your evening, if that's okay. Thank you so much for joining me. I've no doubt people will take a lot from the conversation, absolutely, and I really, really appreciate you coming on. We can find you at, so on Instagram, you're Ursula Cullen Coach.
That's me, yeah. Ursula Cullen Coach or at Suits Coaching.
Okay.
Either or.
Excellent, no problem. Yeah. Cool, no problem. And then people can just get in touch with you via that. And hope to hopefully you'll be busy out for the next while within reason. Within reason.
Yeah, that's it. Within reason.
Exactly. Okay, super stuff. Ursula, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll chat to you again very soon. Have a fantastic evening.
Great. Thank you, Pork.
Okay, everybody. So you've just been listening to episode number 40 of the Humble Coach Podcast. We had the pleasure of chatting to Ursula Cullen, and the founder of Suits Coaching, in this episode, and I want to say a massive thank you to Ursula for joining me. I have no doubt that you're gonna have great success with your new company, and I wish you the best of luck for the future. If you guys like to check out any of the other episodes, you can check us out on our home base, which is on podbean.com, but also we're available on iTunes, we're available on Stitcher and Spotify, if you're hanging out on those platforms. Okay. Hope you have a fantastic evening, everybody, and I'll chat to you guys very soon. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.